you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Start your Saturday with something that will grow your kiddos' brains and get their creative juices flowing. Join us at LAS in Pasadena for a morning of multilingual readings, interactive performances, and lots of kid fun. It's Super Fun Saturday on June 1st. Get your tickets at las.com/events.
This is Antonia Cerejido, the host of Imperfect Paradise. You're listening to part 4 of our series, Strippers Union, the behind-the-scenes story of the first U.S. strip club to unionize in decades. Quick heads up, there's some explicit language in this episode. On this episode, we find out what's happened in Star Garden since the strip club unionized in August of 2023.
It feels like a battleground. I've been written up for touching myself, crossing the black line, vaping inside, walking on the floor without my heels on.
We get into a new aspect of the strippers' fight to have control over their working conditions. The stripper co-op they started on the side.
It's just a very common refrain to say, well, why don't you open your own club? Oh, we're doing that. We will have our own club where we don't have to deal with a boss in this way.
So much talk about unions during the hot labor summer. What about co-ops? We visit a pop-up stripper co-op show that was like no stripping experience I'd been to or heard of before.
Burn the witch! Burn the witch!
Burn stripping the witches, queer vampires, clowns, and labor laws collide in this episode about sexy cooperatives. LAS producer Emma Alabaster, who reported the Strippers Union series, is here to talk me through the recent developments at Star Garden. Hi, Emma.
Hey, Antonia.
So, Emma, the last time we saw each other, we spent that surreal night at Star Garden.
Yeah, and that's how we ended the last episode, was our very special night at Star Garden on reopening night.
After a year and a half long campaign, Star Garden opened as the only unionized strip club in the U.S. at the time in August 2023. And Emma and I were there to see its reopening night.
Do you want to remind us a little bit about what was so weird about it?
It was just quite a unique experience that felt like palpably tense. It was a cashless strip club, unheard of. They were literally chanting union chants from the stage. And we were all a very polite mix of like journalists and organizers who were politely applauding at all of the dancers on stage. And so I'm curious, what's happened since then?
Unfortunately, the vibes are still pretty bad in the club. And when I called them up, that's what the dancer said. Here's Wicked.
4 months later, it's not great news, unfortunately. It still feels like a battleground.
It seems like business has been pretty bad since they reopened, and the dancers blame management, and management blames the dancers for that. In terms of what we saw on reopening night with the high cover charge of $40, that was 3 times more than other strip clubs in the area, that has been lowered from $40 to $25. The ATM was reinstalled in the club, so now customers can get cash. However, management is still not giving any change. So the bar is still cashless, and if people want singles, the dancers themselves are bringing those singles still to break up the larger bills. We asked management's lawyers about this, and in an email they said, quote, "Change for tips is not the responsibility of management. Management does not touch the tips."
I understand why the dancers are saying that the club is harming the business through this high cover charge, not giving cash out. But why does the management say the dancers are impacting the business?
Management's lawyer sent out a statement in December, and it did give some examples of what they thought was disruptive. One example, quote, "Dancers of the Bikini Club have dressed up in frightening clown and Handmaid's Tale costumes."
Did you talk to the dancers about that?
Yeah. So they said that they have, in fact, dressed up as clowns and in Handmaid's Tale costumes.
They were like, confirmed, we have dressed like that.
Yes. You know, they like to dress up in costume. That's something that they did on the picket line. And I asked Wicked a little bit about why specifically Handmaid's Tale.
Handmaid's Tale is very much just a story of the cruelest, deepest oppressions of the feminine form, and sometimes a horrifying parallel to our reality.
So when y'all are doing a theme like Handmaid's, is it just purely a way of like trolling management? What's the goal behind that?
It is like a little bit getting back at management. It is a little, you know, subtle rebellion, a way to make management just as uncomfortable as they've made us. And also, we love a theme. Themes boost morale. They make it fun. They give us a talking point. Yeah, we love a theme.
There still continues to be this like deep tension between management and the dancers.
Yeah, it seems like each side is using the tools that they have to try to get each other to change. So what that looks like from the management side is they hired an HR consultant and they have been writing up the dancers for what they see as infractions to the rules.
That's interesting because you'd think that the dancers given their complaints before would probably want an HR person, but it sounds like the HR person has mostly been cracking down on them.
Yeah. Wicked says that she's been written up a lot in the last few months.
Since reopening, I've been written up for touching myself, crossing the black line, taking unauthorized breaks, vaping inside, walking on the floor without my heels on. We're not allowed to touch ourselves on stage. Lots of girls have gotten written up for that, but we pushed back really hard against that. And then it was, you cannot simulate sexual acts on stage. And I'm like, do you not understand what this performance art is? It definitely feels like the goal is like they're trying to make this untenable for us so that we give up and go away.
It's like so confusing to me that strippers wouldn't be allowed to touch themselves. It seems like counterintuitive to the whole thing, as Wicked pointed out. Like what, why, where do these laws come from?
I asked Star Garden Management's attorney directly about this, and in an email, the lawyer wrote that the Star Garden house rules incorporate many requirements of local and state laws and rules for general safety. Their lawyer says some of Star Garden's house rules come from the California liquor laws specifically. And the liquor laws say things like, if your business serves alcohol and there's someone topless, they have to be at least 6 feet away from customers. Or if you're a business that serves alcohol, you can't have entertainers simulating sexual acts. We talked to a journalist named Susan Shepherd, who covers this, and she said that for the most part, these laws exist in a lot of states, but it's particularly rare for a strip club owner to be the one enforcing it because, you know, that's in tension with a lot of what happens in a strip club.
Right. One thing that's interesting is that, like, the big difference between when the dancers first started organizing and now is that they've gotten a lot more support. Like, I'm curious how that's impacted how they feel about their position.
The dancers filed charges with the National Labor Relations Board, and they actually shared a copy of that with me. The claims say things like that management was bargaining in bad faith, that they've gotten in the way of strippers earning tips, and that they refused entry or charged higher door fees to some union supporters. And so they went on a one-weekend-long strike to try to draw attention to their legal battle.
Union busting! Dancers from Star Garden Topless Dive Bar walking picket lines again. They're accusing Star Garden's management of unfair labor practices.
Steve and Jenny, you're no good. Treat your workers like you should.
Wicked said that the turnout was really great and that they felt really supported by their union and other union members who showed up.
It's just been really wonderful to feel so connected to this force, the labor movement and labor history. One of my favorite things to yell now in the club when my dears are on stage is like, I love those union titties. Let me see those union titties, baby.
The dancers are still waiting for the National Labor Relations Board to weigh in on the claims. And according to the NLRB, Star Garden management hasn't submitted counterclaims against the strippers' union.
It seems like the future of the club is really uncertain.
The dancers also echoed that uncertainty.
In the end, there's still the idea that Star Garden just might not survive, which is pretty devastating to me, to be honest, because I know how great it can be if given the opportunity.
So while they still wait to see how this all plays out, there's this other dream that some of the Star Garden strippers are pursuing, the stripper co-op.
Oh, that's like a part of the story that we haven't really explored, is that while they were fighting this union fight, there was this other plan that they had to try to create a more equitable workplace, right?
Yeah.
When we get back, we get into the strippers' co-op and actually attend a co-op show. Stay with us. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/paradise, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/paradise now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/paradise.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
You're listening to Imperfect Paradise. I'm the show's host, Antonia Cerejido, and I'm joined by LAist producer Emma Alabaster, who reported the Strippers Union series. Hey, Emma.
Hey, Antonia.
So, before the break, we heard about how this group of strippers has hopes beyond the unionization of Star Garden. Can you tell me, what is the stripper co-op?
Okay, so when the pandemic started and the strip clubs closed, a bunch of dancers were trying to figure out how to make money. And Reagan and some other dancers started doing these virtual strip shows. So they would have these shows on Zoom, and they also experimented with a different money-making model, which was splitting the tips equally. The stripper co-op comes out of that time, and it's a mix of Star Garden dancers and other dancers, and they've been doing hybrid pop-up shows, so in-person and virtual.
In October, we went to an event produced by the stripper co-op called Out for Blood in honor of Halloween.
Yeah, the event was not at a strip club. It was at the Federal Bar in North Hollywood. The dancers' eventual dream is to own and operate their own brick-and-mortar establishment. For now, they partner with event spaces.
I gotcha.
Plus one.
And a plus one.
Well, come on in, enjoy the show. There's table service, so there's no need to go to the bar and have a great time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was in person with our senior producer, Natalie Chudnovsky, and you were virtual.
I'm watching on Zoom at home. Oh, my cat wants to get and say something about it, too.
Halloween anniversary show, Out for Blood. Thank you guys so much for supporting us.
And I loved how high concept it was. This was like a spooky night and everybody had like a storyline.
I am going to need some audience participation for Reagan's performance. I want everybody right now to chant, "Burn the witch! Burn the witch! Burn the witch! Burn the witch! Burn the witch!"
There was like a vampire that killed their lover. One dancer had fire coming from their shoes.
I mean, to me, it reminded me more of burlesque shows that I've been to.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of straddling like burlesque and performance art. I think because they don't have to answer to a manager, right? They're their own bosses. It gives them a lot more creative freedom in terms of playing with the art form itself. Well, everybody got on the pole at some point, but there were a lot of other things that happened. Reagan did a whole monologue before she danced.
"Let me tell you whom you have condemned. Not one begotten of a shepherd swain, but issued from the progeny of kings."
I think people are really bringing, other parts of their creative practice to their stripping.
Yeah. And, it was still very, like, sexy. Like, there was a lot of sultriness. So, I like a storyline. It gets me in the mood.
But I want everybody to give a warm welcome to this next feminist demon that's going to suck your soul. Give it up for Cinder.
And then one thing at the end that was, like, incredible was that they did a massive lap dance where they had like 5 people from the audience on stage and like in a circle, and they went around them and they played Daddy Yankee's Gasolina, which I love personally. And it was just like, it was like a mix of like the exuberance of like the end of the camp party with like a quinceañera and stripping. I was like, wow, this is the full experience. Okay, Emma, you and I had so much fun at the show. But one question that I'm still left with is, like, what about what we saw makes it a cooperative? Like, how does a cooperative business work?
So the kind of co-op we're talking about here is a worker-owned cooperative. And what that means is the business is owned by the people who work there, and also that it's democratically run. One person, one vote. And actually, a stripper cooperative has existed before. The Lusty Lady, that peep show in San Francisco that we talked about that unionized in the 90s, they also became a worker-owned cooperative in 2003. And they ran that way for a decade until they closed.
You know, we heard so much in like the hot labor summer about unions, but not so much about worker co-ops. Like, how common are they?
Yeah, worker co-ops are not as popular in the U.S. as they are in other countries, but they are on the rise here. I talked to this expert on worker-owned cooperatives.
My name is Esteban Kelly. I use he and him. I'm based in Philadelphia, and I've been the executive director for the U.S. Federation of Worker Co-ops since 2015.
I asked Esteban about how popular worker co-ops are, your same question, and he had actual numbers to share with me. The 2021 co-op census report says that worker co-ops grew 30% in the 2 years before. It estimates that there are about 10,000 cooperative workers in the U.S., and it says the majority of U.S. worker co-ops were started in the last decade.
That's so interesting, because we've talked about how union membership is actually down despite all the coverage we've done of unions. And it's interesting to hear that co-ops are actually on the rise. Did Esteban tell you why there's been an increase in worker co-ops?
I asked Esteban about that, and he said one reason is increased government support, like programs that give technical and legal assistance to co-op startups or offer tax incentives. And he traces that uptick in government support back to the 2008 financial crisis, Occupy Wall Street, some big moments that shifted our political economy and collective consciousness. Here's Esteban.
It was like, wait a minute, this whole social contract is not working. And more people, including in government, see that. This is not a partisan issue, by the way. The trend of everyday people, working people are not getting a fair share. We've seen more awareness, more interest, more education, and more organizing around the worker co-op model.
What kinds of businesses tend to be worker co-ops?
So there are a lot of worker co-ops in the service and retail industries, as you might expect, mm-hmm. but also a lot of other kinds, including some for performers or entertainers. I asked Esteban about what kinds of co-op he sees across the country.
You know, there's like cliches about the bicycle shop worker co-ops and the cafes and restaurants or the bookstores. And those are still there. Those are true in a lot of places. But worker co-ops have now been taken up as workers who've been left out of the economy to opt into it. So we've then used the worker co-op model to innovate ways of incorporating refugees, immigrants, sometimes undocumented workers or guest workers, farm workers, domestic workers into the economy in a way that is legal and formal.
I personally have used a company in New York called Up and Go, where I can go online and hire someone to come clean my apartment. But the house cleaner is an immigrant woman of color who's also a co-owner of the cooperative business.
Is the idea that like co-ops used to be associated with boutique businesses, often in well-to-do places patronized by the well-to-do, like a food co-op in Park Slope? But now they're being used more by workers who are like in precarious working situations. So like an undocumented worker who is easy to exploit because of their legal status. And so now co-op offers them a different avenue to have more control over what they make.
Yeah, Esteban thinks that because co-ops are a good tool for marginalized workers, that a stripper co-op makes a lot of sense.
What does it look like to have gig workers, to have sex workers use cooperative models to actually get a fairer share of an economy that otherwise is going to exploit us?
Esteban thinks the co-op model can present opportunities to respond to issues that arise with a lot more flexibility.
It'll just be more fun and more playful, honestly, to not have cookie cutter models. Like if every restaurant was the same, like what's the point? Like knowing that there's different ways that different people do things and a prefix thing is going to be different than a happy hour menu is going to be different from a... So why shouldn't it be that way for sex work or any other industry that you're in?
When we come back, we talk through some of the challenges the stripper co-op has faced and what the co-op model can offer as solutions.
This whole mission stops if the shows aren't profitable.
And also, two dancers who couldn't dance together at Star Garden are reunited on the co-op stage.
You are gonna get ready for danger!
Stay with us. As a farmer's son from a desert region in California, J.B. Hamby thinks a lot about water.
I spent a lot of time digging up history, particularly about water, which is the origins of the Imperial Valley.
How this 28-year-old became the youngest lead negotiator on the Colorado River ever, and how he could shape the most consequential negotiations to date. Listen to Imperfect Paradise, the Gen Z water dealmaker, wherever you get podcasts.
Hi, I'm Tracy Thomas, host of One for the Books, and we are back for another round.
This is clearly an NPR audience.
Yeah, I think they're so smart. What the hell?
My guests this time are actor Vella Lavelle and author Amanda Montell, whose new book, The Age of Magical Overthinking, is out now. Join us on May 15th at the Crawford Family Forum for book talk, trivia, and hot takes. Tickets can be found at laist.com/events.
You're listening to Imperfect Paradise. I'm the show's host, Antonia Cerejido, and I'm joined by LAist producer Emma Alabaster, who reported the Strippers Union series. Emma, how do you think the co-op model factored into the pop-up show that we saw? Like, how did you think it translated onto the stage?
Well, one thing I think that translates into, and the dancers have talked about this very explicitly, in terms of the values, is to have a really diverse group of dancers. I know that's part of what these dancers want to do with these co-op shows, is to expand the more traditional or heteronormative or white supremacist ideas of what is sexually desirable. And so there's a diversity, racial diversity and gender diversity, and a diversity of sizes of bodies on that stage in a way that I did not see when I went to Star Garden.
Right. And it's not just that the dancers all have a say in what we see on the stage, but the co-op model means that they all split the revenue and the tips equally.
The other thing that splitting the tips does is it means that if it's true that the dancers who are skinny and white are going to get more tips on stage, it doesn't matter in this model because everyone shares the tips equally. I know for me, I'm not that excited by seeing a lot of skinny people. So it was nice to see some larger bodies on stage. And also, like, I was thinking about how diversity benefits even a standard strip club because not everybody wants the same thing. Like, they want to be able to attract a diverse customer base. So maybe younger or more progressive people, maybe women or queer or trans or gender nonconforming people, people who might not feel welcome necessarily in your standard strip club. And not all of those people are necessarily going to come with the big tips. So it's interesting to think about how they're striking that balance between bringing in those traditional customers and also bringing in new customers and how who they hire might impact that. And that's something that I actually talked to Reagan about.
It's been interesting trying to strike a balance between these ideals, pushing people to see different kinds of beauty and trying to appeal to a certain customer base that has the power to really make or break a night. And unfortunately, I have like a sad example. A customer that has come to many of the shows in the past, I don't know if he's returning. He felt comfortable enough sort of sharing with me why. And it was because like he was not attracted to certain bodies on the stage, which I found like so disappointing that like that would prevent you from like even like coming out and having a good time.
One thing that was really interesting about being on the Zoom is that the couple of people that did have their cameras on are what I would imagine as central casting customer at a strip club. Older white guys. The vibe that I got in the chat too is that some of these people really follow these dancers and are like fans and go to all of their shows.
The word that I keep coming back to is balance, like having simultaneously the most diverse and interesting cast while also making sure to have the big fish come in and throw the most money to like sweeten the pot so that everybody gets a bigger piece. Because this whole mission stops if the shows aren't profitable, if there like isn't a big enough bag to split and for everyone to go home feeling like this is sustainable.
I wanted expert on worker-owned cooperatives, Esteban's take on what Reagan said about some of their high-spending customer base being less interested in more diverse bodies on stage.
We're never free of the constraints and conditions of the market, the political economy around us. Like, it is not utopia. It gets into the opportunity that worker co-ops, at least in this moment in time, have, that we're still small enough within the U.S. economy that you can lean into your niche. For example, there's worker co-ops that do like fitness gyms, like CrossFit or Muay Thai or things like that. And they might say, Monday is women and femmes. That's just our business model, which is different than saying our gym is only for women and femmes, but to say there's a market niche here.
So Esteban thinks that if the stripper co-op is able to get a brick and mortar space, that's something they could put into practice to cater to different customers.
I think there could be a similar opportunity there to be like, okay, Wednesday is our big spender night. We're going to cater to them. We're going to let them know that that's the night where we're doing that pandering, and that's going to pay the bills. And then we're going to be these wonderful queer people on Saturday night and do our own thing and let our freak flag fly.
When I talked to Star Garden dancer Velveeta, she said the stripper co-op is still producing pop-up co-op shows, and they're working towards the dream of opening a brick-and-mortar dancer-owned and operated strip club. But it's clear that this process presents a different kind of hope for the dancers who are involved in both projects, Star Garden and the Stripper Co-op. Here's what Velveeta and Regan had to say.
It's just a very common refrain to say, well, why don't you open your own club? Oh, we're doing that. All the trouble that we're going through to get a union contract. It's motivating to know that we will have our own club where we don't have to deal with a boss in this way.
I want the city to like embrace this idea. Ideally, it's like alternative strip clubs like pop up, you know, all over. And it just, it like pumps new lifeblood into this like struggling industry in LA.
It was really interesting to see how the co-op worked in practice. My personal favorite part of the night was that we got to see Danger and Wicked reunited.
As a reminder, Danger was Wicked's mentor who taught her how to dance back in North Carolina. And in 2021, Wicked wanted Danger to come dance at Star Garden, but management actually didn't allow Danger to audition.
Danger would have been the only Black dancer at Star Garden if they hired her, which of course didn't happen. And this was the first time that she was back in Los Angeles since she tried to work at Star Garden.
You are going to get ready for Danger!
It was so special to see Danger dance.
The second she got out in the room, the energy just went up like 10 octaves. Like it was like a burst of joy, and she was just like so fun to watch. And I did feel the danger.
It looked like she was gonna like bust her head open, but she was totally in control.
She would do these like drops, and I was like, oh my God, is she gonna hit the floor? And then she would catch herself with her thighs. I was like, oh my God, I was having a little bit of a heart attack.
Oh, she just went, slid all the way down the pole so fast.
And I got so excited when Wicked came and joined her on stage.
Oh, Wicked's coming on the stage too. Oh my God, they're gonna dance together.
The very end of their act was clearly their special trick. Danger was upside down, like essentially doing a handstand with her legs wrapped around the pole. And then Wicked was above her. And was she standing on Danger's stomach?
Yeah, as if she was like surfing on Danger and twerking at the same time.
That surf tour. Was wild. A surf tour. That's the technical term for the move.
Surf tour.
Oh, shit! Mississippi. I traveled from North Carolina yesterday. That's how me and this girl met. I am so proud of her. She did this part of me. I taught her how to dance, you guys. Y'all have met her before. I'm so proud of all of you guys. I'm so happy to be here.
And what was it for you, like, emotionally to see them dancing together?
It's funny because I don't think that people think of stripping necessarily as something that has, like, a tenderness to it. But even though it was athletic and it was raunchy, it felt like very sweet and tender to me.
I love that. So Natalie and I caught up with Danger and Wicked after the show.
Well, this was like emotional. How do you two feel right now?
I was super nervous.
Why?
Because it's my first time in LA in like 3 or 4 years. That was the last time I was here, and I tried to get in that club and then they turned me down and I didn't get to dance out here at all. So, like, me coming back and dancing this time, I was super nervous. But then I heard my song, and then I jumped back right into Danger mode.
How does it feel having seen Wicked go through successfully unionizing the club?
I am so proud of her. So the biggest takeaway for me is inspiration. Because one person affected a gazillion people. Like, she made it possible for me to even be here to see why she got where she got. I am so happy that I got to be a part of this. Like, it's, I almost want to cry, but I'm not going to cry because I'm too G for that.
Danger and Wicked were both still riding that post-performance high. And I asked Wicked what it was like to dance with Danger for the first time in years.
All I really wanted to do was prove to her that I can now, like, throw ass properly. Like, I know how to throw it back now. Like, without question, I know how to twerk.
Oh, my God.
This is exactly what I wanted. I wanted LA to show my girl some love. I'm really emotional.
We're going to let you have your after party. Yeah, we're going to let you go. Have fun.
I love how they you can hear that they both want each other's approval and are proud of each other, right? Like Wicked's like, I want to prove to you that I can properly throw ass. And Danger's like, I'm proud of you for unionizing. It's very sweet.
Same diff.
Definitely.
Wicked started this journey, the only stripper at Star Garden looking for community. And she has not lost her sense of direction. She's hopeful about the co-op.
It is still like another shining star in the night sky for us to aim our rudder at. If this does not work out, if the Star Garden really goes under and we do not get the reward at the end of the journey that we thought we would get, then there's always the next horizon. We're following a different star. We continue on to build and support the community that we care so much about.
Next week on Imperfect Paradise. After Roe v. Wade was overturned, there was a movement across the country to make abortion accessible at universities. California was the first to mandate that all public universities in the state make abortion available on their campuses. And yet, many students have no idea.
Did anyone at any point say anything about you being able to get a medication abortion on campus?
No. No.
That's next week on Imperfect Paradise. This episode of Imperfect Paradise Strippers Union was written and reported by Emma Alabaster and me, Antonia Cevejido. I'm also the show's host. Catherine Mailhouse is the executive producer of the show, and Shayna Naomi Crockmull is our vice president of podcasts. Natalie Chudnovsky is the senior producer. Jens Campbell is our production coordinator. Mixing by Donald Paz. The Imperfect Paradise team also includes Emily Guerin. Imperfect Paradise is a production of LAist Studios. This podcast is powered by listeners like you, donating as little as $5 a month. And we can only keep making more episodes like this one with your partnership. Support this show by donating now at laist.com/join. This podcast is supported by Gordon and Donna Crawford, who believe quality journalism makes Los Angeles a better place to live.
This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Start your Saturday with something that will grow your kiddos' brains and get their creative juices flowing. Join us at LAS for a morning of multilingual story times, interactive performances, art making, and lots of kid fun. Bring the whole fam and join us for a super fun Saturday at LAS in Pasadena on June 1st. Tickets at las.com/events. See you there.